Welcome to the Teaching Self-Government Podcast with Nicolene Peck. Improving your life, uniting your family, changing the world.
Welcome to the Teaching Self-Government Podcast. I'm Nicolene Peck and I'm joined here with my daughter, Paige Baumert. Hi, Paige.
Hello.
Okay, Paige, we have to have a little moment of truth here. We have been slacking on the podcast lately.
And, just a little bit.
And people that listen to this one first, they'll be like, what? Anyway, but we were just cruising along so well, you know? And then just life happens to people. And then sometimes you have to go, well, we might have to take a break for something for a minute. And we did that. And the break got a little longer than we thought it would. And Here we are. We're finally back at it. But I'm so happy to be back to making more episodes for our podcast. People have been begging. They keep reaching out to me. I'm getting texts from people and I go to conferences and they're like, when are you going to do more podcasts? I really love your podcast. And I'm like, oh no, we really have.
See, it's a whole scheduling thing.
It is. Yep. We do.
See, your life got infinitely busier. My life got infinitely busier.
You have a couple of twins, right? And it's like,
well, just one set of twins, but yes,
that's true. But there's a couple of them because that's they are true. Twins. Yeah, so your life is so fun and living the twin life, and I'm doing a lot more things too, a lot of public service stuff, and it's life gets crazy, but here we are. So today we're talking about building resilience, about teaching children how to bounce back when they've had disappointments or setbacks, or you know, things happen in their life that are hard for them, because you know what, life's hard for everybody and children feel hardships as well. And sometimes they can take those hardships pretty deeply. So we're going to talk about creating a culture for resilience within your family and in your relationships. But before we do that, we have a tradition here on the Teaching Self-Government Podcast, where we share a fun family activity. And these fun family activities, they're usually like pretty inexpensive, sometimes completely free. This one that we're going to share is like not going to cost you any more than your normal life would cost you. And so it's so fun. Paige, talk to us about a fun family activity. What could we be thinking of? Something fun to do just to mix things up a bit.
I'm all about mixing things up because I'm very spontaneous by nature, and I'm actually learning how to self-govern and, you know, stick to a schedule more. But sometimes even within that schedule, you can mix it up a bit. So this one is a backwards dinner night. So it's pretty much what it sounds like. So you start with dessert first, and then you have the main meal, and then you could have like an appetizer or, you know, even like a breakfast meal if you want to go backwards the whole day, right? So
that would be so funny because you could be like, here's dessert, here's a little piece of chicken, here's a quarter of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Here's lunch.
Yeah, exactly. And here's
a piece of bacon.
Yeah, exactly. Put a piece of bacon. That would be so funny. Oh my word. And juice. And, you know, orange juice or something.
Yeah, so stuff like this makes my spontaneous side very happy because I know I thrive when I have a good schedule, but then I'm also like, but I don't want to be told what to do all the time. You know, a little rebel coming out in me. So I'm like, yes, we're going to have dessert first.
Paige, you do have the inner rebel. It's true. You're not rebel tendency. Like there are the tendencies. You're not rebel tendency, but there's this part of you that questions like, well, why do I have to do it that way? I want to just be spontaneous and just woohoo, fly off a little bit of pride
sneaking in, you know, where sometimes I have to do things the hard way.
Yes. It's true. It's so true. Well, I love this activity for the topic that we're talking about today because, I mean, it's going to be different, right? To have a backwards dinner.
I mean, I feel like if I did a backwards dinner with Clara, she'd be all about it.
Oh, she'd be like, more desserts, please.
You're like, no, it's time for the protein now.
Actually, the toddlers could struggle. They could be like, I think I'm good. I've had my chocolate chip cookie. I'm done, you know, or whatever.
Exactly.
Anyway, but I do think that this is really fun because it teaches a person how to adapt to things being a little bit different. And I don't think it's the type of adaptation that's going to get the family upset. They're going to be like, why don't we eat dessert first more often? But I do think that it's a great little object lesson too for, sometimes we plan on things going one way, but they turn out a different way. And what are we going to do when things do not go exactly as we planned or as they usually go? I think people, just by nature, we're creatures of habit, We like things to go a certain way. And when they don't go a certain way, unless we're planning on them not going a certain way, in which case the plan is now for them not to go a certain way, which the backwards dinner would be. But if we're planning for everything to go just so and it doesn't, there's emotions and feelings, there's disappointments, there's, sometimes sadness. Sometimes a person can feel like a failure. There's lots of things that could happen. And so we need to point that person in a direction where they recognize this isn't an unhealthy circumstance. In fact, these failures, these setbacks, these disappointments, these things that happen that we weren't planning on don't need to be seen as bad things.
The unexpected no
In
answers.
fact, working through them can help make us navigate more hard things in the future. It can help us recognize how strong we are and that life's okay, even if some of these things happen sometimes. So we've got to point them towards self-government. So we're going to talk about some things to do, Paige. But first, give us the definition of self-government or a little simple understanding of what self-government is.
True, we gotta not forget that part. So, self-government by teaching self-government's definition is being able to determine the cause and effect of any given situation and possessing a knowledge of your own behaviors so that you can control them.
And I like that you put emphasis on that word you, because a lot of people think that their problems are going to go away because of what somebody else does, right?
Yeah. Well, if someone hasn't been taught to analyze, not overthink, but just analyze their emotions and make an action plan for how to overcome hard things, then of course they're going to expect someone else to take care of them and say, "Well, I don't know how to do it, you do it." Right? And so it comes from a very entitled behavior as well. So and especially
Well,
when it comes to
I think when they're little, they also, when they don't know how to do something, they go to mom or they go to dad, help me. And then they can get help. And so sometimes just having that person there to help them all the time can even, for some personalities of children, almost like make it so that they think they can't fix their own problem because maybe anytime they try, it's not as good as what mom or dad does. Maybe they're a perfectionistic or something like that. And so, there's different personalities of children that are gonna, maybe be a little bit more apprehensive about fixing their problems, but it's something we have to train them to do, and we have to help them understand that they have a responsibility to solve some of their own problems.
No, in fact, I was doing worksheets with Clara today for part of her school, and she's still getting the hang of writing. She can hold a pencil beautifully, but when it comes to actually writing down numbers and letters and stuff,
She's three, everybody. She's three.
oh yeah, 3.5, sorry, 3.5. She gets mad if we don't add the half.
That's
Anyway,
true.
but 3.5.
Love those toddlers. Love them.
Yes. But she's learning how to write her name and learning how to write numbers, stuff like that. So for these little worksheets that we're doing, so we're doing a simple addition math worksheet, and we're figuring out the problems. I said, okay, yeah, that's the answer. We figured it out. Good job. Okay, let's write the number. And one in particular, she was writing the number 9, and I had an identical worksheet for me to do. So I said, "Okay, this is what a number 9 looks like. You do a circle and then a line down the side." And so she did this itty bitty little circle and then a line that kind of went diagonally out to the side. And I'm like, "Well, okay."
She did
I'm
it.
like, "Well, I bet it would be even better if we made the circle a bit bigger." And we put the line straight down instead of straight out. And so we erased it and we tried again. But, she started to draw a circle and it didn't quite go how she expected it. She went, "Urgh." That's what she does when she gets frustrated, It's immediately, "Urgh." And I'm like, no, we don't work that way. It's okay. We're going to try again. It's not a problem. And so, but, it was something that she wasn't expecting. She was expecting to be good at it right away and to have it appear on the page how it appeared in her head. Or how it appeared on my paper, right? And so when it didn't, she's like, that's not what I wanted, And so I said, it's okay. And then,
Because she has a high bar for herself. Yeah, I
she
mean,
does.
she might, be one of those ones that likes things a little bit more perfect. Otherwise, I'm not going to try, kind of a thing. And I mean, her dad's a little that way. It might be genetic, kind of a thing. So this type of frustration is something that she has to learn to get through so that it doesn't become a stumbling block for her whole life, because she could end up later in life, she's trying to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and the bread tears when she's spreading the peanut butter or something, and she could all of a sudden
Rude.
be in tears or whatever, instead of just going, well, I'll just cut it right in that place and I'll try not to think about the fact that there's a hole in there, or I'll fill the hole in with peanut butter. That's what I would do, or whatever. Just like,
More
that's
protein.
a water barrier. The jam won't get out.
Exactly.
Put the bread with the hole on the top. Don't turn it up the other way and you're fine,
That's
or whatever.
right. That's right.
Anyway, so I think that, but she could maybe even, have a situation where she feels like, well, I can't make my own food because I made a mistake and I can't fix it, or I'll make another mistake, and she'll stop trusting herself to be able to solve her problems. And so it's so good that while she's young, that you're not coddling her and that you're having this tone that is like, listen,
Well,
that's not
we
how we
actually have a
handle
trigger
that.
phrase that we use too. We have
Okay.
a trigger phrase that we use. Something that we've started doing is, she'll say, "Mama, I want this." And I'll either say, "Cool." And just leave it at that. Or I'll say, "What are you going to do about it?" So then she has to think, "Oh, okay, I have to do something. I can't just expect it to be done for me." And so, or if she's upset, I'll say, "Okay, what are you going to do about it?" And so then she'll say, "Mommy, can you help me write this number?" And I'll say, "Yeah." Or she'll even say, "Can you do it for me?" I'm like, "No, I'm not going to do it for you, but I'll hold your hand while you hold the pencil and we'll write it together." Right. And so she knows that she has a resource, but she has to speak in a specific way and have a specific tone, like you were saying, in order to get the help that she's looking for.
Well, she needs to ask, and she needs to go into problem-solving mindset instead of you solve my problem mindset, which is different. So you saying, what are you going to do about it, turns it back to her prefrontal cortex, where she has to go, wait a minute. Okay, me giving it to mom didn't work. If I'm going to solve this problem, how do I get the help from mom but still solve my own problem, right?
Well, and sometimes the help isn't me actually like sitting there and like doing it with her or doing it for her. Sometimes she'll say, "Mom, can you help me clean up this room or whatever?" And I'll say, "Yeah." So I sit there and say, "Okay, pick up that thing. Where does that thing go? Go put it away. Pick up another thing. Where does that thing go?" So I sit there and I don't do anything but talk her through the process.
Yeah, that's what you have to do when you're training them, that they can do it themselves. And then afterward, you can say, wow, you cleaned this room all by yourself. Mom didn't put any of the things away. It was all you. And then that's very empowering and very exciting for a person to recognize that they did it themselves, especially a toddler, like, oh, I can clean a whole room myself. And then it pushes off in the future that overwhelm that might happen. All right, so let's talk a little bit about some of the things that children might experience. And I know you've got littles at your house, but there are a lot of things that could happen with the older children, all different ages. But when we're talking little children, what types of, things do we need to be resilient with? What types of circumstances are they going to find themselves in? They're trying to do something, like she's trying to write the number 9 and she can't. That's one thing. So a failure, a little failure.
Or learning new skills. So having your vision not come out quite how you wanted it. And like you said, that happens with small children and older children as well. Maybe there is a teenager who is trying to have a friendship with this person and it's not quite looking how they thought it would. They were super excited at first and then they got to know the person more and they're like, "Ooh, maybe this person isn't someone I want to spend a lot of
Or
time with."
someone's not being nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that actually happened to me. I spent a weekend with a group of people and I initially clicked with one person real fast, but then as I got to know this person better, I was like, "Ooh, this person's kind of annoying." And they're kind of socially immature. I don't know if I want to spend a whole lot of time with them. And so it was like, okay, well, how do we figure this out? Because I'm with them for a whole weekend. So what am I going to do now that I've, become buddy buddy with this person? How do I figure this out without losing my mind? So, but
Yeah, so you
it's
had
an
to have
interesting.
your own problem solving and your own resilience. And
I did.
I think what you're getting at is that you can't let the emotions weigh you down, right? So step number one is, okay, well, you're gonna feel maybe frustrated or let down, like, oh no, that person's actually harder to be with than I thought they were, or I'm not instantly good at this, or I didn't get my way, or my brother took my toy, or whatever it happens to be, there's gonna be something, or someone took something out of my room, and or I don't know. I got a bad score on my school assignment or something. Okay, there's a lot of different things that could happen to a person. For some people, if they experience that type of a setback or a failure, they will start thinking bad about themselves. They'll start thinking, "I can't do it. I can't do it. I got to get out of here." They'll start being selfish, mean,
Playing the
aggressive.
victim, which is the other end of the spectrum.
Right, or they might be the victim, depressed, not talk to anybody, isolate themselves, maybe because they're not being included by somebody, or they wanted to be more included and people to talk to them more than they were. And I mean, so there's actually, a lot of reactions that people will get into, emotional reactions, because they immediately go to the, well, how does this make me feel? Place, right? And while it's good to know how people's behaviors impact you and what your feelings actually are, if you start diving too deep into that, you could actually get lost, and then you're actually choosing to make your problem worse than it is. And I think that's the part that children don't understand, because if they don't have the skills, and some people will say coping skills for things. I'm just going to say, well, they just need basic skills. They just need some simple basic skills. So when Clara couldn't write the number nine, when she, and she wanted it to look a certain way and it didn't, that's a no answer for her. She wanted it to be a certain way. It wasn't a certain way. It didn't turn out a certain way. Even though she tried to perform the task as best as she could, it didn't turn out that way. So that means it was like hearing a no. And the thing is that no feels really personal, because it was a no on her own actions and she can't deny it. I did the actions, they weren't good enough. And so I know that that no is targeted right at me, right? That I'm not good enough yet.
Well, and just a little sidebar on that, from the parent perspective, I had to, when she did redo it, I had to say, that is good enough, even though that's not as good as I would have tried to get it, but that's good enough.
Right. Well, because you're looking at developmentally where
Well,
she's at,
but because I have a slight perfectionist side too, so it's like, okay, no, that looks like a nine. We're good.
Okay. I think you will always know if you draw that shape, that's a nine. We're good. Yeah, exactly. And it'll get better. And that's the other thing you can say, is you can say, that looks really good. Look at how much better that is than what we did before. And the more times you draw this nine, the better you're going to get at it. It's just going to keep getting better. And I think teaching our children we don't have to be perfect at something at first is really important. And we should set the example for that ourselves. In fact, I'm glad you bring up, yourself and your own tendencies, because I think as a parent, you can do something wrong or something doesn't work out or whatever, and you can say in front of the children, "Well, I'm getting better at this. I think next time I'm going to be even better. I'm not going to be perfect at it at first, but I'm going to keep trying and I'm going to keep working on this. My Jell-O will be less runny next time, or whatever it is. Like,
For your
yeah.
backwards dinner adventures.
Exactly, or whatever it is. This is the first thing that came to mind, and I don't even know the last time I made a Jell-O, so I don't even know why I thought of that. But anyway,
Or my meal prep. I had some shady meal prep stuff happen. I'm like, well, next time, next time.
yeah, we will improve. I'm learning. I'm learning. And I think you do say stuff like that to Clara pretty often, because when I was watching all of the children about a week ago, she said to me at one occasion, "Well, I'm learning, Nini, and I'm just little and I'm learning, and so I'm gonna get better at it." And she was talking about how, because we were talking about how she lied, and she was saying she's learning and she's gonna try not to lie anymore. And
Oh yeah,
that
that
was
was a whole adventure.
good. That was good, but I will say that at least she knew, though, that, well, I wasn't perfect at it this time, but I am gonna get better at it. And I said, "You're exactly right, Clara. We have to keep learning, we have to keep trying, and we have to keep, thinking through what it is that we're gonna say ahead of time so that we don't just go straight to a lie." Right?
Yes.
Anyway.
The
Anyway.
experimentation with lies and excuses is rampant at our house currently.
Yes, experimenting. Anyway, so yeah, but I did think, well, clearly she's heard this from someone. So that's a good thing. That's
Yeah.
good that she's
So I
heard
mean
that information.
there's so many different setbacks that can happen, whether you're little, whether you're an adult, whether you're a teenager, whatever it is. But there's definitely things that can happen to help, not necessarily soften the blow, but to make those no answers and things a little more expected. In fact, a story comes to my mind. Just the other night, Clara and I, we were just staying up late, just the two of us, because we were waiting for Daddy to get home from work. And we were spending a few minutes on my phone, and we were doing something, and then an ad popped up, and she was like, I'm like, hey, we don't talk like that. It's just an ad. It'll be over in a few seconds. It's fine. And so she's like, I don't like the ads. And then, there was something else we were doing, and I said, okay, if we want to have this outcome, it requires us to watch an ad. And so, do we want to watch the ad? And she's like, yeah, I think we can do that. So when we pre-taught that, this what we wanted to have happen in whatever we were doing on the phone required that we watch an ad to get, something out of it. Then she's like, okay, we can watch an ad. An ad is okay. But if it just popped up in the middle of something, she's like, I don't want to watch an ad, And so, but the pre-teaching, and it's a silly example,
No,
but
but actually, I'm like, okay, it's another no answer. There she is.
it is.
She really likes things to go her way. Like
Oh,
when
yes.
she wants it, how she wants it. She is one that she needs to really work on those no answers, because she doesn't get to have control all the time,
Yeah,
right?
no, but I noticed that when I told her ahead of time, I said, hey, in order to get this outcome, we're going to have to watch an ad. Are we okay with that? And so she'd sit there and think about it for a second. And then she'd say, yeah, I'm okay with that. So, I pre-taught her, I'm like, okay, this is the action that has to be taken in order to get this outcome. Do we want to do that? And she's like, yeah, let's do that.
I think it's
But
great. You pre-taught
yeah.
her, and then you also actually even gave her a choice, because it was something you knew she wanted to do, and you're like, "But you don't have to choose to do this. This is not one of those things that is like an instruction or something. You can choose." So then she knew she was choosing that she had to be interrupted by an ad as well.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so
that's
pre-teaching is
awesome.
huge. In fact, I've noticed a whole lot. She loves disagreeing appropriately, which is another thing that we can do. But I've noticed that if I say no and she has to disagree appropriately and the answer is still no, she does way better than if I just say nope. And she's like, well, because she has an opportunity to, I think not only to share her point of view, but to have an extra minute to think about it and to, analyze it and process it. And oftentimes when I do say, it's still going to be a no answer, and let me tell you why. Because sometimes I feel that it's necessary that she knows why. Anyway,
Of course.
yeah, because then once I tell her no, she's, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, and she felt like she was understood, and I think that's the biggest thing, right? Okay, so we've talked about quite a few little it's like a shotgun of like what could
Yeah, sorry
be.
about that.
No, that's okay. About what could be frustrating for people. We've really been using little examples from Clara because both of us see her all the time. And anyway, and the stuff that she's learning and doing, which is fun. But there's a lot of things that can happen in life. A friend, your friends can decide they don't want to be your friend anymore. That's hard, right?
Yeah.
And
When I was
that type of
actually
rejection could feel really rough for a person. How do you help someone bounce back from that? We got to talk about that.
So, I mean, when you have disappointments like that, when you're a bit more cognitively developed, English is hard, then it's important that you have someone who can help talk you through these things and say, hey, I'm really struggling with this. Emotionally, this feels painful because I really wanted this to work out, but it's not. And so, as a parent or someone, a trusted advisor, you could say, it's important that you say, yeah, that does hurt. I've been through similar situations, or I've known people who have gone through similar situations, and yeah, it hurts. But we don't have to stay in a place of hurt forever. We can acknowledge that it hurts, and 5 or 10 minutes we can sit here, shed some tears, you release some hormones, but then we're gonna make a plan, and we're gonna say, okay, well, what can we do instead? How do we want to feel? How are we gonna get there? Okay, let's make a plan and let's set up an action plan for what that's gonna look like. And
Yeah.
that's where, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, finish your thought.
I say, and that's where, for older children, and it works for younger children too, but for older children, those parent counseling sessions come in. You say, okay, it's a specific problem that you have, that you're dealing with, not that's necessarily caused by you. Sometimes they are, but in the friend's case, it's not caused by you, but you are being affected by it. So let's figure out what we're going to do because you can't control these friends or your supposed friends that you really wanted to have a connection with. You can't control them or what they're going to say or do. And so let's fi figure out what you can do and what you can control and go from
Yeah,
there.
so this is kind of like a debrief of their situation, right? And so to have some sort of a structure in place for how the child can debrief what's going on with you is going to be really healthy. So the child should always feel like mom and dad are somebody that care about them and that they can talk to, and that there's going to be this tone of caring that they understand, they're supportive, they're not afraid of a few little tears. They even recognize sometimes tears are part of life, but at the same time, they don't coddle, they don't enable, okay? Because there's a way to, because if you're crying over every single thing that happens, every single disappointment, you might need to toughen up a little bit and have a little bit more grit because just regular life, you don't get to have control over everything. Now, at first, things might be a little bit more emotional, but over time, it should get easier and easier and easier, especially as one of the biggest things as the parent is you just expect that they are able to accept no answers or disappointments in life because a disappointment is basically another no answer. So if you've read the book, Porter Earns a Quarter before, and Paige, I know you have, I'm talking to everybody else, but if you've read
I
that
know.
book, if you've read that book, it says in there, when you don't get something that you prefer, that's
Like
like
hearing a no
hearing a
answer.
no answer. So basically, what that's saying is if you get a disappointment in life, that's like hearing a no answer. And guess what? All the things in life aren't always yeses. Oftentimes they're nos. And so we have to learn how to be okay with that. And as we practice it time and again, it's going to be better. But at first, as The child needs to know that they can come to you, that they can talk to you, and they need to know how to initiate that conversation. Because if they don't know how to initiate a conversation with you, then they could end up isolating, especially if they're a type of person that is like more perfectionistic mindset. They're more like that white type personality. It's like, I'm a peacemaker. I don't want to cause problems for anybody. I don't want to take anybody's extra time to solve my problem. I don't. And so they just retreat into themselves. It's like getting sucked into a black hole, it's just, whoa, right? And they carry all their emotion in there.
Intricacy of emotions, yeah.
Yeah. And all that kind of stuff. Okay. That's not good. All right, that type of isolation is not good. The person needs to know, listen, when something happens, we talk about it. We debrief it. We discuss it. And I know it can seem like, oh, but I don't want to take the time to talk about it. Maybe we won't take the time every time, but you have to take the time sometimes to talk about it. Now, occasionally there's, see, now here's the problem is that we assume everyone's like that, especially in our weird therapeutic world where we've over therapied everything. So we think that every single person does that. If someone tried to make me discuss every disappointment with them forever, it would make no sense for me because I don't let disappointments really get me down. It's very rare that I have a disappointment that I feel like I need to discuss with anyone. I may state it as a matter of fact to my husband, something like, I totally ran out of gas on the side of road today and this person had to help me get gas or whatever. And then
And
I
I
just,
was an hour late to my meeting.
yeah, and I might just tell him matter of fact, but I'm not experiencing any emotions about it still, right?
Yeah.
And I don't need him to go, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. Oh, I don't need any of that. I just am telling him, just so you know,
That
this
also is
happened.
part of your personality too, because some people do need a little more empathy, and then they're ready to move on. You know, I feel like in contrast, I'm actually a little more that way. So sometimes I'm like, you know, I had a hardship today. I'm not necessarily crying about it. But just tell me that you recognize that that was hard. And you know, Joseph would be like, yeah, that was hard, babe. You know, I'm sorry that you had that. I'm like, thank you. Okay, but I moved on. I'm fine.
Yeah. Well, so okay, but this is to the point I was trying to make, which is that there are different personalities, right? So there are some personalities that they can just go, well, that was a little setback and I'm moving on. And they just naturally can do the resilience thing because they go, well, I'm going to just try it again. And they just motivate themselves, they pick up themselves, they have grit, okay? But in our culture right now, we have a lot of coddling and stuff that's been going on, and a lot of our children don't know they can choose to be okay. They don't know they can choose to drop the subject in their own heads and stuff. And so then they can end up feeling kind of isolated or even shut down if there isn't a little bit of talking that actually happens or like a debrief after something occurs. And so one of the best things you so Paige, you talked about pre-teaching. That's the debrief before something occurs. So there's debrief that happens after something occurs too. So a parent can initiate a debrief by praising. That's one way to debrief when things go well, or correcting when a person needs to learn something and we need to practice something the right way. That's another type of a
Any
debrief that a
both are
parent
points
can
of
do.
connection.
Exactly. But there's also something called the parent counseling session, like you mentioned, and the child can initiate that and the parent can initiate that. So the parent can say, you know what? Let's just go have a talk, just me and you. Let's go out on the swings
I've noticed
together.
something that
Let's,
needs addressing.
yeah, let's just go have a conversation. Come here. I gotta just give you a little hug and talk to you about something, or have a little popsicle on the porch, kind of a
Oh, that's
thing.
the best kind.
Exactly. Just something where you just have this little minute together where you connect. And there's, I'm not going to go into all the steps. There's 14 steps that make a really good parent counseling session.
A
And
nice
that's,
detailed, yeah.
yeah. And there's information about all that stuff like in my course and like the TSU parenting course, which is at teachingselfgovernment.com. So you can find a lot more information there. But there's the process that you can go to where the child feels really understood, where you're making sure that you're doing that active listening, but also where you're helping them come up with the solutions that they need. You help them really own that decision. So there's key things that you can say and questions that you can ask in a way that leads them in a good direction toward resilience, which could be really great for them. But also, the child can initiate a parent counseling session. So if they know, hey, these parent counseling sessions are great little talk times with my parents, then teach your child that at any time they can come up to you and say, Mom, can I disagree appropriately with you about something? And that's one way to initiate a talk time, because a disagree appropriately interaction, which is one of our four basic skills, can often lead to a parent counseling conversation. Like it can kind of just go into, oh, we need to discuss this further, kind of a thing. But then another thing that they can do is just say, hey, can we have a parent counseling session? And if my child ever said to me, can we just have a talk, or can we have a parent counseling session? I'd be like, oh, yes, we absolutely can. And so this is
Well,
a
and it
child
might not
to
come
tell
out
me
with
what's
that
going
lingo. It
on.
might be like, "Hey, mom, I need help with something. Can we chat?"
Yeah,
Or
exactly.
I'm feeling something and I want to talk about it.
Right. And why would a child know to say, I'm feeling something and I need to talk about it? And this is hopefully because you've pre-taught the person that there's feelings, and then they have thoughts, and then they have emotions, and that their feelings can lead to thoughts, and they could be productive thoughts or non-productive thoughts, which could lead to productive emotions or non-productive emotions. And so we've got to address what the feeling is and see if we can pick the thought that's going to take us in a good, productive direction. And really, that's the big thing with resilience, is do you understand how your thought patterns actually relate to your feelings? Because you're going to have a really hard time bouncing back if you pick a non-productive thought every time.
Well, and also, I mean, everything that you just said right there was a whole analysis process. And so if you don't take the time to analyze often, which you were very good at helping us with that growing up, then you don't have the mindset of let's think about this in a non-emotional spot. You know, let's go through the thought process, let's go through everything and analyze it, see what went wrong, you know, if something did, or what could go wrong if a situation hasn't happened yet. And analyze that process. Because if you live in your emotions, you're just overthinking. And you're
Well,
instead of analyzing.
totally. And you develop a habit of doing that,
Right.
which then makes it make you it disempowers you. It makes you feel like you can't, that everything tears you down. And I love how you're saying make a habit of discussing, what your options are and stuff, and how you could pick other things, because that reminds me of the SODAS exercises that we teach in the TSG parenting course, and in the trainings, and in the book Parenting House United. There's also a whole SODAS journal. So I'm not going to go into all the details on those steps, but that process, that 5-step process in the SODAS exercises that helps a person learn to solve their problems and plan for the future, for their future successes, is something that's really empowering, but they have to have thought it out ahead of time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're going
Well,
to fall
and
into the habit
it's
that's not
interesting that you bring
good.
that up because, I mean, like we mentioned before, when you get in your emotions, sometimes you can play the victim card, right? And when you are in your emotions, you're giving the responsibility of fixing your problem to someone else, and you're not taking responsibility for your own emotions and your own actions or your own thought process. You want someone else to fix it because it's not your problem, because you're not being noticed when times are hard or whatever it is, right? But when it comes to that analysis process, that is you consciously taking responsibility for what you're thinking, what you're doing, what you're not thinking, what you're not doing, you know, and figuring out where those blind spots are. And so you're saying, okay, I know I have a problem here, and maybe it was something that I did, or maybe it was a negative emotional reaction to something someone else did. You know, I took something personally, but I don't want that to affect me for forever. So how am I going to change me so that next time someone says something similar, I'm not emotionally affected by that negatively, right? So it's a whole mindset of I'm going to take care of my problem because it's mine. Instead of, I have a problem and it's someone else's job to fix it because I just can't.
And you're talking about actually a cultural thing,
Oh,
I mean,
100%.
because you said, well, you were really good about doing that when we were young and stuff, and because it was the culture I was creating in our home, and there is a fine line between this callousness, right, of hey, listen, get over it, right? There's a fine
It's a
line.
tone thing.
Oh yeah, there's a fine line between that and you can do this. It's okay.
I'll be right here watching.
I'm gonna help you here. Here's the step you need to focus on. You can disagree appropriately. You can say, okay, what do we need to do? We need to drop the subject. So helping a person use the skills that you've trained them to have, or helping them remember the problem-solving exercises like the sodas exercise that you went through when they really need it, is huge. Even though you're not solving their problem for them by taking it away from them, which you can't really ever do anyway, you're not being that person that's just like, what's wrong with you? Get over it. Everybody can do this. You're not being mean and callous, but at the same time, you're empowering them and you're teaching them grit.
Well, it also dips into the whole roles issue too, because it's your role as a parent to say, hey, it's my job to help you learn because I'm the teacher, right? That's my main role as a parent, mother or father. I'm your teacher. But your role as a learner, and a good, avid learner is someone who figures out what their resources are and uses them. I am one of your resources. If you need help, come talk to me. However, you are also your own resource. You're learning these skills. So dive into your own brain and say, okay, what knowledge do I have to help me fix my problem? Okay, I've got this piece, this piece, this piece, but I feel like that's not quite the whole picture. Let's go to my other resource, my teacher, my parent, and say, hey, mom or dad, I have this problem. This is kind of what I'm thinking. Might be able to help solve it, but I think I'm missing a piece of the puzzle here. Can you help me think this through? And that's also where the sodas come in too. But it helps the child understand that it also is their responsibility to help fix their own problem. And they understand that more as they get older into the, middle school and high school age era. But, when they're younger, it's mom, I have a problem. And mom goes, oh, okay. Well, here are some pieces that you need. Let's put it together.
Because you're giving the steps to the skills, they can't solve a problem without somebody giving them pieces to draw from. So you give them tools ahead of time, then you prompt them when it's time to evaluate their tools and when to draw upon that toolbox and decide what to use. I love that. I love that. And that's what a caring parent really does. I think the caring tone is really important in all of this, but it's important that it's not coddling and enabling. It's empowering, it's motivational, it's understanding, it's supportive, it's caring. But it's also like, no, you can do this. You can get past this. And I think it is really important for parents to actually have confidence that their child can get through a hard thing. When the parent doesn't think their child can get through the hard thing, then the parent is going to disempower the child. I hope that everybody is seeing on this podcast today or hearing that we are pre-teaching a lot of things to the children. So there's this anti-fragility mindset, this pre-teaching preparing because we don't want to be fragile mindset that actually prepares the way for them to be able to be resilient in the future. So that's huge, actually. And so for the resiliency to be there, the pre-teaching really needs to happen up front. And then we could go into detail about mentor meetings. We're not going to do that here, but after you make a plan for how somebody is going to work on their resiliency in a certain area, so maybe in a parent counseling session, you say, you know what, when somebody doesn't include you in something, what are you going to think? When you feel left out, what are you going to think? What skill are you going to use? Are you going to disagree appropriately? What is it that you're going to do? And then we'll check up on how that goes. After you're done with it, come and meet with me. But each week, we'll see how you're doing at managing some of this social stuff that sometimes is hard, right? So then you can use that regular follow-up time with the weekly mentor meetings to help them see that they're making progress. And it helps strengthen them because you're deliberately discussing it.
And that's, as they get just a tad bit older. But I mean, I have to go help my daughter with resiliency right now, my one of my twins, because she's crying. I have to go help her take deep breaths.
Okay, well
So
then we're gonna go. But what a great segue into an exit. Thank you everybody for joining us on the Teaching Self-Government podcast. We'll talk more next time about things that impact your daily life. You can find more information at teachingselfgovernment.com.
bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Teaching Self-Government podcast. For more information and resources to help unite your family, visit teachingselfgovernment.com.